Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. Sorry for the late release. I'm going to try to get this in before midnight Eastern Standard Time. The wife and I took a trip up to Forbes State Forest. Now, I used to live in Forbes State Forest. It was a beautiful, beautiful area. Just absolutely lush green forest. And today, as I drove through, a lot of it was razed. A lot of it had been cut down. And just, it broke my heart to see it. It was sad to see it. And it's kind of weird. I long for the days of whenever I live in the forest again. But it really hit me hard that I can't go back there anymore. That place doesn't exist physically anymore. That's a place somewhere in time. Now, if I'm right, if these encounters that we're having with entities all throughout history, if it is a war, and it's a war that we're losing, today was the first time, seeing what we did to that forest, today was the first time that I kind of thought, maybe we should lose that war. I can't see that they would take care of the planet any worse than what we're taking care of it right now. But that's neither here nor there. On to this week's tales. Our first tale takes us all the way back to June 23rd, 1976, around 11:45 p.m., Arikanduva, Sao Paulo, Brazil. All that 18-year-old Paulo Cantanho wanted to do was better himself. He was taking night classes, but then one night he failed to return home. The next morning, a friend brought Paulo's school books and notebooks over to Paulo's parents. He had found them scattered on the road around midnight. The police got involved. They weren't able to find him. Neighbors got involved. They weren't able to find him. Very, very soon, the Cantanho household became ground zero. Mission control, if you will. Many, many people gathered, trying to find Paulo. Suddenly, Paulo's father, Jose Alves, he felt this strong sensation that his son was all right and that his son would return. He should go back to the garden to find traces of his son. He didn't. He just felt like he should. But he looked at the other family members and said, It's okay. Paulo is okay. And almost immediately, the groans were heard. The family rushes. They open the back garden door. And there's Paulo, lying on the steps, just in and out of it. He's not really all the way conscious. He's close, but he's not quite there. He's muttering. No one's really understanding what he's saying. And Paulo is cold. It's almost as if he's been there some time. One police officer who was at the house reached down and carried Paulo to the ambulance. And as the police officer is carrying Paulo, skin to skin contact, he can feel that there's like this weird rash on Paulo's body, especially like around the arms. But that kind of makes sense if Paulo is wearing a shirt. You know, really the only skin-to-skin contact is going to be the arms. Some ballpoint pens are in the boy's pocket. Now, later on, these pens would be tested, and they would be found to be strongly radioactive. Not a little bit radioactive, strongly radioactive. Fast forward to 7:30 that evening. A neighbor of the Calton Hose, Virginia, was standing on her front porch. She sees this luminous object very close to the roof of the Calton Hose house. She's not the only one. Virginia's daughter saw it as well. Whenever Paolo is revived at the hospital, he begins to recount the tale. All day during the 23rd, Paolo could hear a mysterious whistling sound. This sound would whistle a little bit, stop, whistle a little bit, stop. But he just kind of, it's something. It's cicadas. Maybe it's those weird things that my ear does. You know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. He leaves his class at about 11:30, walks his girlfriend home, and then after he drops his girlfriend off, he sees a light in the sky moving westward. At first, maybe it's an airplane, but very quickly, no, that's not an airplane. He's walking. All of a sudden, he just kind of shudders a little bit, and he realizes he's paralyzed. He can't move. This light slowly approaches Paolo, and then it descends. It lands about 25 feet away from Paolo, and it very slowly dims and goes out. Emerging from this extinguished light is a very short being, a big head, large eyes, pointed ears, a small mouth, and an upturned nose like a pig's. He's bald, no eyebrows. He's wearing this one-piece suit of bluish-gray collar, and there's an emblem on the chest. Paolo then rises into the air along with this humanoid entity. He finds himself above the ground, and he sees a 650-foot long cigar-shaped object. It's reddish in color. Paolo and the entity start to go towards it. As they get closer to it, the collar becomes metallic gray, and they pass right through this. Paolo finds himself lying on the floor. He's in a dark gray circular area. Three of these beings are just standing there, watching him. Paolo gets on his knees, but is almost immediately paralyzed again. Paolo receives a telepathic message. We're not going to harm you. These humanoids turn, and they start to walk towards a wall. Paolo doesn't want to follow, but he is compelled to follow on his knees. The wall vanishes. They enter a larger room. Six more of the humanoids. There's no furniture. There's no visible light source. The entities stop. Paolo sits on the floor. He's facing one of the walls. His thoughts are turning to his girlfriend, a friend of his at school, his parents. And as he's thinking of them, images, moving images, appear on the wall before him, doing what they're actually doing at the time. Paolo is furious. He goes, "What do you want with me?" They don't speak. That he just gets that telepathic feeling of, "We will not harm you." Paolo then gets a new telepathic message. "We want to discover how life arose in the universe." Paolo then realizes three of these humanoids are just a little different. And they tell them, "These are the females." A dialogue has been opened. Paolo then says, "How do you reproduce?" And he gets this response. "On our planet, there is no sex. Children are produced in a laboratory and prepared for definite functions in our society." Paolo says, I want to go home. At this point, one of the beings places his hand on a projection on the wall, looks at one of the females. The wall disappears. And there's a red lighted corridor. Paolo walks across the room, and something like a bed comes out of the wall. Paolo finds himself floating in the air again, and then on the bed. One of these humanoids passes his hand over Paolo's body, and it illuminates wherever it passes. Paolo then rises into the air again, and he finds that he's leaving the object. The next thing Paolo realizes is that he's lying down. He can hear his parents talking, but he's not able to speak. He doesn't remember the policeman loading him into the ambulance. He doesn't remember saying anything. The only thing that Paolo could remember was that his whole body was numb and prickling. Our next tale is going to take us back to February 27th, 2017, 12:35 a.m., Big Bear, California. The witness, who has decided to remain anonymous, was staying at a Best Western hotel. At 12:35, they decide they're going to walk to their car to get some luggage. Now it was snowing. It's extremely dark. Their car is facing a country road. I don't often think about California getting snow, but apparently so. I do not enjoy the cold, but on the moments that I have to deal with it, I would say that probably the best time is that stillness, that nothing happening, that like real late at night with the snow, and it just seems like you can hear for miles and miles. I just picture that being the case here. They unlock the car. The parking, the interior lights, they illuminate. This light begins to be reflected in two eyes that are staring at the witness from the middle of the road, just about 10, maybe 15 feet away from them. The witness had lived in Colorado. So the first thing that they're thinking is, oh, this is a deer. They stop. They stand very, very still. They don't want to scare off this deer. The witness's eyes adjust a little bit better, and they glance downwards. They notice that what they're staring at isn't a deer. It looks like a white, hairless, naked man on all fours, at least 4 feet in height on all fours. If this thing would have stood up, the witness judges it might be around 15 feet tall. There's this split second where they make eye contact. This humanoid turns around and runs as fast as a cheetah away from the witness, straight up a tree. The witness is just frozen. They say out loud to themselves, "You have to be flipping kidding me." Normally, I censor out the curse words. That is a direct statement. I'm not censoring anything out. You have to be flipping kidding me. The witness is trying to convince themselves, this can't be happening. And it's leaping from treetop to treetop. And as it's leaping from branch to branch to branch, the witness sees the full outline of the creature. This speed, this strength, it astounds the witness. It's definitely solid. It's not a ghost or what have you. The witness is coming to grips with, maybe this thing was hunting me and the light from my car stopped it. He's not seeing any genitalia. He doesn't know if it's a male or a female. He just knows that this creature has very human-like qualities. A little bit of oddness here. It was a new moon that night. And there had been an eclipse that day also. There was also a creek across the street. But the witness doesn't know what to make of this. The witness feels that if this had been a huge-eyed gray alien, that it would have made more sense to them. The witness has heard of those. None of it made any sense. The creature shouldn't have been able to be supported by the treetops. As soon as it hit one of those branches, it should have went smashing to the ground. It also appeared to be flashing like a TV going in and out of reception whenever it would sprint up the tree. Whenever it would go through the leaves of the tree, it didn't push them out of the way. It didn't disrupt them. Now this witness rushes back to the hotel room because she has an ounce of common sense. She doesn't stick around. The witness calls her father. Her son's asleep. And she realizes no one knew what hotel she was staying in. I would have done the same thing. I'd be crying on the phone with whoever I was talking to. Now, the witness is on her cell phone. The hotel phone rings. She picks up that phone, and there's only a dial tone. Then all of a sudden, remember, this is like 1 a.m., 12:30, 1 a.m. at night. She goes, looks through the peephole, no one there. Her son wakes up. She tells him it's just a scary dream. The witness gives their father the hotel information. And he goes, go wait in the lobby. As they're leaving, there's another knock. But it's at the back sliding glass door that goes out to a private fenced-in patio. It bothers this witness so much, they still live in fear. The hotel phone number, whether this means anything or not, has six sixes in a row. If you're akin to think this may be a demon, the six sixes in a row. But I don't really think that correlates with anything. But who knows? There are no coincidences, I've heard. It doesn't seem like this would be an alien. Can you imagine something like this trying to fly in a spacecraft? It's one of those weird humanoid encounters that doesn't really fit into any good category. But one thing's for certain. This was not there to do her any good at all. Our last tale is going to take us all the way back to the summer of 1993, East Tennessee. As in many tales, the witness has decided to go anonymous. Now this man, he's a real outdoorsy guy. He loves going hunting, especially up near his cousin's place. He goes out, he's big hunting, big on fishing, big on camping, and he always has with him two German shepherds, Fez and Garbo. He's going up to his cousin's property, and since he knows his cousin is going to be nearby, he packs light, hikes a couple miles into the Smokies, and sets up camp. All day long, it's just him and his dogs, and it's a near-perfect day. The only real weird thing, at one point, they find some droppings, and the dogs fuss over this large pile of droppings. He thinks it's a bear, just a pile of bear scat, but he doesn't worry too much about that. They've run into bears before, and the German shepherds have always been enough to scare them off. And if that doesn't work, he has his rifle with. Between those two things, this man is confident that he has all the tools necessary to scare off a bear. Day turns to night. The hunter has settled down, starts a fire, warms up the campsite. Fez and Garbo, the German shepherds, they're not doing well. They're agitated. They're barking, sometimes growling at something in the distance. Now, the hunter, he settles in for the night. And it's warm. It's very, very warm. So he decides he's going to leave the tent door open. Fez and Garbo, the two dogs, they nestle in close to him. Something wakes him up, though. Bright moonlight is illuminating the camp. The dogs are making deep, low growls. But then he notices it. That noise that doesn't belong. There's a thrumming groan coming from outside the tent. The hunter grabs his rifle, exits the tent, and as his eyes adjust to that darkness, he can see the outline of what he believes to be a bear. It's just beyond the flicker of the embers of the campfire. The hunter goes, "Hey, bear!" But instead of running away, this form stands up. It's towering over the screen window in the tent roof. He's never seen an animal this big outside of a zoo. The two dogs are growling. They are terrified. The hunter can hear this creature breathe in. And it just keeps breathing in and breathing in. It's a long, slow breath. And then it lets out this trumpeting roar. Something like a lion's roar and a human shout mixed together. The dogs are terrified into silence. The creature bolts away. The dogs then give chase. They're ignoring the hunter's commands. The hunter grabs his rifle and his headlamp, runs after them, and he can hear Fez and Garbo barking in the distance. But the woods are hard to navigate at night. The rocks, the branches, they're too much for a human to navigate quickly at night. and he can't keep up with Fez and Garbo. And then he hears it. He hears the sound that is going to keep him out of the woods for 30 years. Maniacal laughing. Something like a hyena. It's coming from the same direction as the dogs. I don't know if you're like me. My dog and my cats, they mean everything to me. Fez and Garbo meant that to this hunter. So he follows the sounds of the barking. He follows the sounds of the laughter. He hopes that the dogs are going to be found safe. The night wears on. The barks fade into silence. Self-preservation kicks in. Brave though he is, the hunter realizes that he's got to return to camp, or he'll never find his way back. He stays up all night. He calls for them. After the sun comes up, he goes off to search for them. And he finally finds them. But it's not good. One's dead. The other is badly injured and whimpering from a thicket of bushes. Both the surviving dog and the hunter, they become fearful of the nighttime, the woods. There is something in the Tennessee wilderness. There is something in the Pennsylvania wilderness. There's something in almost every forest on this earth. Be it things that come from the sky, hairy man-like creatures, 15-foot-tall interdimensional entities. There's something just beyond the darkness that does not have good plans for us. As I've said many times before, I believe we are at war with something. Let me ask you a question. Why would the government care if Bigfoot exists? I understand aliens. That's a huge implication. But the government has shown interest in Bigfoot. The government has shown interest in ghosts. The thought of weaponizing something comes to mind. But the thought of a secret war with something also comes to mind. That's where I think we're at. I think the government keeps these things quiet because they don't want us to know that no one really knows how to fight this enemy. Thank you for joining us once again on Strange Pathways. Please head over to our Twitter, Pathways Strange. Our TikTok is Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Instagram is Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Facebook is going to have a few photos about today's tales. Once again, they'll also be over on our Instagram and our Twitter. If you'd like to email us, you can do so at strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Head over to the YouTube channel. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a family member. It's nice to see this podcast grow a little bit every single day. It seems like we're getting a new subscriber, more downloads every single day. We're growing organically. I'd like for it to happen quicker, not going to lie, but the important thing is that we are growing. So be sure to tell your friends, be sure to tell your family members, people you talk to on the internet, grab people on the street, probably not a smart move. But I want to thank you so, so much for joining us here this week. I'm going to let you guys in on something. I am starting to write my first book, a companion piece to this podcast. Tentatively, the title is called Ruined Lives. It's an entire book about how certain paranormal encounters have ruined the lives of those individuals who've encountered them. So look for that coming up, probably not anytime soon. But thank you once again for joining us here on Strange Pathways. Take care of yourselves and each other.